cancer screening. It's all those tomorrows you want to see. Healthcare.gov. Better health is in your hands.
Having the most fun on the way home.
Everyone's out to have fun.
Let's party.
VOX.
1460 WVOX.
Welcome to Brand Talk, the only show on radio where branding gets practical and personal, here on WVOX Radio, 1460 on your AM dial. Heard on our new day and time, Thursdays from 5 to 6. My name is Dr. John Tantillo, and we're here to talk about brands, your personal brand, your career brand, and even your business brand. Question: have you ever refused to believe that something was going terribly wrong and simply could not accept it? Well, today we're going to discuss two brand examples and how we can avoid what I call brand malfunction in our own brand lives. So tell us about your denial moment. And what I mean by denial is not a river in Egypt, but okay, you didn't respond.
Well, because that's an oldie but a goodie.
Okay,
that's like good morning, good afternoon to me.
Okay,
denial ain't just a river. Come on.
All right, I'm sorry.
This is broadcast radio. Okay. We got to raise the stakes.
Okay. By the way, that's TJ McCormick.
Hello.
My radio partner.
And apparently a comedy critic.
I love you.
I love that. You right back.
Okay. All right. But anyway, let's get on with the show. Anyway, if you want to weigh in this denial moment, and I won't say that joke again, 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110. Or doc at brandtalkradio.com. We're going to talk about the denial.
Denial of a bad situation? Is that what you were getting at?
Yeah. In other words, you get data coming in.
Right.
And you just don't believe that your Hydrox. Uh-huh. Hydrox was the first Oreo cookie.
Right.
Okay. And what happens is a competitor comes out and you say, oh, they could never top sales.
Right.
Oreo, they're a newcomer.
Oreo was the second?
That is correct.
Wow.
Hydrox by the Sunshine Biscuit Company was the first. And Oreo came and the rest is history.
Wow.
And I mean, I was in political campaigns. We're going to win.
Yeah.
We're going to win. And we lost.
Well, I was just
we were the better candidate.
I was just going to say the people in denial are those who were saying, well, the recovery's not going as fast as we want it, but it's going in the right direction.
Well, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the President Obama's brand and polls. I got some data here you're going to love.
Okay.
And a product that was in denial, Ralph Lauren, and the debacle. This is the Olympics. How can you make products?
Yep. And you know, the very first thing that crossed, and I'm not kidding, the very first thing that crossed my mind when I heard that it was Ralph Lauren, because they did the big rollout, because then you could buy it. They did it when they launched it to let everybody know that this is what our Olympians were wearing. That was the day that you could actually buy these same outfits retail. You could buy the double-breasted jacket. Looks good. And right away I thought, boy, I hope they made those in Mount Vernon. But, boy, I hope they made them down south.
Well, that's going to be our loser. We're going to talk about that. We have a brand winner.
Uh-huh.
And then we have something very interesting.
Okay.
A guest who is a professor who teaches his courses online.
Oh, very interesting.
He's with an online university.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about the online university today.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that.
And I have my brand winner of the week a little bit later, too. I want to volunteer my own brand winner.
I love it.
All right.
I love it. That's what we do here. But, you know, folks, if you're joining us for the first time, this show is about brands. And whether or not you're talking about your personal, professional, or small business brand, what we do here at Brand Talk is we use the same principles that Fortune 500 companies use to brand their products so that you can go brand yourself. And I was a teacher for many years, teaching marketing and advertising and branding to my students. What I like to do is help you go brand yourself. So if you like to come on, and it's not just about if you have a company, it's also about you, and that's the uniqueness of Brand Talk. Mm-hmm. We use it to help people. We use it to help you in your personal life, professional life, career life, as well as if you have a small business. And 914-636-0110, and at doc@brandtalkradio.com. And we have, as always, next to me in the booth, TJ McCormick, who you can hear on Sundays, called the TJ McCormick Show. I just can't know. He's gonna crack me.
If you may be so bold.
No, it's called. What's it called?
It's called the Larry Gonzalez Show.
It's TJ talking.
It's called Sunday Night with TJ McCormick.
You're a brand guy now. I'm gonna call it
Moisha Fishbein on the weekend chit chat. That's what I'm gonna call it.
All right.
We're gonna have a whole relaunch of the thing in the fall.
Okay, that's great.
I'm on hiatus the rest of the summer.
Oh, fine. That's great.
In other words, I got too much going on the weekends to do my Sunday night show right now.
Okay. It's TJ McCormick. You see him on Fox. You see him on Fox Business. You see him all over the place. He comes on CNN. Yeah, I mean, he's all over. And, of course, every week here on Brand Talk.
No.
So let's just talk about this brand denial. We're going to talk about Ralph Lauren, but
whose real name is
Lipschitz?
What did you say? You can't say that on the radio.
Yeah, don't get me nervous. I think
yes. His name is Ralph Lipschitz.
Right. So
which is just fun to say on the radio.
I know. I don't. Yeah.
But right. Isn't that he's from the Bronx?
He's from the Bronx.
He grew up with Carl Reiner.
Yes.
And there was a whole great documentary called The Bronx Boys that I knew the director of.
Sure.
And it's about those guys. A bunch of successful men came out of that bunch.
Oh, a lot. And you know the other one, your friend there who wrote Marshall. Hey, the one.
Gary Marshall.
Gary Marshall. Yes.
That's who I'm thinking of. Not Carl Reiner. Gary Marshall.
Gary
Marshall, sure. Ralph Lauren, and a handful of other fellows went on to be very, very successful.
Yes.
And, very interesting. Yeah. All from the same neighborhood in the Bronx.
Well, if you want to talk about your denial moment, 914-636-0110. I just have to say this because, and I did some research, so folks, mm-hmm. I'm just not talking off the top of my head. If I were the Obama campaign, I would be very nervous at these poll numbers. And no one's saying it. Everyone's talking about how bad Romney's doing, I have a degree in research.
Yes, you do.
And I've been listening to this nonsense for the last 4 months, mm-hmm. and then O'Reilly brought up that he was going to tonight. So see if I'm right. He was going to take a look at the polling data, Carter versus Reagan.
Okay.
Where they were in July. Okay.
All right.
July of 1980. Mm-hmm. Okay. Carter, 34%. Reagan, 37%.
Wow.
Now, remember, it's going just about the same way
with
those two right now.
Sure.
In August, Reagan, 45, Carter, 29.
Whoa.
Now, you know why that was?
Wow.
You know why?
Why?
No one remembers. If you want to.
Was it the Olympics?
No. Well, that was.
I remember the
Democratic convention and our good friend Senator Kennedy trying to get the nomination.
Yeah, that's right.
And that reminded everybody about it, and that's where he really took a hit, the president, President Carter.
Right.
And then in September, it was even, 39-39.
That's crazy.
In October, 47-39. And then in November, Reagan won 47-44. But that's not enough, TJ.
Yes, sir.
That's not enough.
Okay, Doc.
Because Tantillo had to look at the results of one of the greatest presidents. And I know you might not like him, but he's still my hero.
Okay.
Because he did what he had to do.
How far back are you going?
1936.
Wow. FDR.
FDR and Dolph Landon. Okay. In July of 1936.
Okay.
Roosevelt 49. Mm-hmm. Dolph Landon 45. And it stayed that way for the whole period.
Really?
There was no fluctuation.
No variation.
No variation. Okay. So, all right. But you know, my friends out there are going to say, oh, no, we got to look at 1940.
Right.
So we look at 1940 and Roosevelt and Wendell Willkie.
Uh-huh.
What happens there? And by the way, Roosevelt loved Willkie. They were even thinking about doing a fusion ticket.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they were even though he was a Republican.
Uh-huh. Oh, I didn't know that.
You did not know that?
I did not know.
Okay. All right. In July, Roosevelt 48, Willkie 42.
Hmm.
And it got close. It was a 46-44, but there was never any sort of vishtikiing going on.
Okay.
There was never that movement, you know, Willkie versus Roosevelt. And then we got to talk about the one in 1944, which was very close.
Right.
In 44, it was 47-45 in July for Roosevelt. And at the end, it was something like 52-49 in November.
Mm-hmm.
The point I'm making here, TJ,
yes,
is that with this data, the President Roosevelt never was losing in the polls.
Right.
It was consistent.
Right.
So that if you have this kind of fluctuation, the problem I see for the president is that this is not good. And if you take a look at the Dick Morris model, where your independents are in fact going, you're undecided, I should say, 90% of them are going to go for the challenger.
Right.
So I just had to say that from a research point of view, and from a brand, I'm not talking politically, a lot can happen.
Sure.
You know, a crisis in the Middle East could change all of that. But from a statistical marketing perspective, if I were the president's people, I wouldn't be so happy.
Well, there are people out there that are looking at the numbers, and you know, it's you listen to what Dick Morris says, and Dick Morris says that in no way is the president up even a smidge.
Right.
That when it comes to likely voters,
right,
it's Romney all the way.
And then there's the other thing about the Obama brand. And that is, I've said this a number of times, is I think that President Obama is a good speech giver. I don't think he's a great communicator.
Right.
And that, I mean, Roosevelt, the reason Roosevelt, he could motivate a crowd.
Yes.
Okay. And the limitation, I think, of the president is he's a preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And we really don't like, most people don't like preachers, and most people don't like professors, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because there's a certain amount of arrogance. And when I was thinking about what I should call myself, what brand name was should I be, the marketing professor or the marketing doctor, I immediately said no to the marketing professor, because that would have communicated that I was preaching or I was above
the people that I would be counseling.
Right.
Much better to say marketing doctor because
right. Well, and also a doctor provides a service.
And a
professor just pontificates and tries to indoctrinate.
Well, see, this is very interesting that you say that. Mm-hmm. And this is what I don't think the polls mm-hmm. are really getting, and some of the statements that are coming out. And mm-hmm. See, it's very hard, and that's why I try not to talk about politics.
Right.
I try to look at this simply from a brand perspective
sure.
and whether or not people are, in fact, going to buy the brand. Are they going to buy brand Obama?
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes very difficult. And of course, then you're considered partisan when you make that criticism. But, I mean, I'd be making it. I mean, the issue with Romney, on the other hand, is he's very vanilla. And you brought mm-hmm. something up very interesting where he wasn't really attacking the president on the right note.
We have this, you know, this has now been surviving about six news cycles.
Right.
This moment that I do not believe is, I do not call it a foot and mouth, and I do not call it a gaffe. What we had was a view into the actual thinkings, beliefs, feelings, heart and soul of Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. And with his whole, you didn't build that. Everybody knows the quotes. Now, you didn't build that. If you have a business. Oh, well, I think those people are so smart. You know, anyway, Romney's return volley on that, I thought, focused on the wrong things. He stood there in his first attack speech after the silly Obama quotes. His first attack speech said, well, you mean to tell me that Ray Kroc didn't build McDonald's, that Bill Gates didn't build Microsoft? Wrong, 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 wrong.
Why?
The people who are offended, the people who were disparaged by the comments of the president that he really meant, were not these titans of industry. Granted,
right.
Apple started in his garage. Apple started in his garage, no doubt. However, right now, today, the people that are losing sleep, the people that were disparaged, the people that are the engine, that are keeping communities afloat, are the small business owners and the entrepreneurs who have lost more sleep in the last 4 years than their whole lives combined.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people. Mitt Romney should have said, wherever he was delivering his retort speech, let's say it was
right.
Ohio, Cincinnati, he should have been, it was Pittsburgh. He should have had his staff go and look up and down the names, go up and down, look Main Street and pick out the name of the dry cleaner and the coffee shop and the thus and so and the Hoosuots and
right.
stand there and say, then don't tell me that Larry's muffler shop, that Larry didn't build Larry's muffler, et cetera, et cetera. That is who he should have been speaking to.
Right.
And finally, the one thing that the left has is they can connect the dots between his reference to a teacher. You've all had a teacher in your life who inspired you. They have some plausible deniability with the line about the roads, etc. You didn't build. If you have a business, you didn't build that. They can at least throw a lifeline onto that line, that bit of line, of verbiage.
Right.
Where he is lost, and where his true colors and his absolute arrogance and his disparaging words really stung, was when he said, "Now, I'm always amazed by." I'm paraphrasing. I'm always amazed by the people who say, "Well, I just thought I was just so much smarter than everybody else." All right, and that got a big applause line. And that's what got him going again. Everybody listen to me right now. Think about it. When he was talking, he wasn't looking at any teleprompters anymore. This was from his gut, ladies and gentlemen. The next line was, and those people say, well, I thought I was successful because I just worked harder than everybody else. Well, there's a lot of hardworking people. Those are the offensive lines.
Right.
I was just so smart, and I worked so hard. That is the line of the Marxist. That is the line of the person of the wealth redistributor.
Yeah. Well, see, I think that is ideologically based, and that will not move independence. That once you start calling him a socialist,
yeah.
the president,
right.
and you what would be
right.
getting, not you, but
no,
when
royal
people's
you. Yeah.
the royal we, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You, or the royal you.
Yeah.
That's what we want to try to do is just take a look at
yeah.
the brand. There is brand discrepancy from the brand that we voted for in 2008 as opposed to what we're seeing now.
Well, there is nothing unifying about these words.
Right.
There is, and you know, that's the thing too, is that, you know, again, people, and I've been involved with leftists online for the last, by the way, the speech was made in Virginia that the Obama gave.
Right.
And I've been referring to it now in all capital letters. I've named it the Virginia speech because I believe that it's a pivotal moment. I believe the Virginia speech could very well be the beginning of the end because what happened was it was stinging. It was derisive. No matter how you slice it, even if it was innocent and you could justify every word of it, justifiable or not, it was not appropriate. It was mean-spirited and stinging.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, bad timing. The reason I say it could be pivotal and could be the beginning of the end for this man and his brand,
right,
is that this recession, unlike many others, has in fact affected. There's only one degree of separation between anybody and somebody affected by this recession,
right,
and therefore now there's only one degree of separation between anybody and somebody offended by these words,
right,
especially independents and moderates.
Right,
he lost hundreds of thousands, if not millions of votes in that speech.
TJ McCormick, John Tantillo, Brand Talk, WVOX. How do you feel about what we're talking about in terms of the Obama brand and the Romney brand? Give us a call, 914-636-0110 or doc@brandtalkradio.com. Talking about different brands, and then we got to move on. We got to move along to the winner and loser.
That's
but before
right.
before I do that, I was fortunate enough the other day to go see Frank Sinatra Jr.
Right.
at Tana, and I want to tell you something. It was wonderful.
Really,
it was really wonderful, and music critic Richard Janelle wrote in 2003 that summarizes my feelings about this about Frank Sinatra Jr.
Uh-huh.
Frank Sinatra Jr. might have had an easier time establishing himself had he gone into real estate, but his show made me awfully glad he decided music was his calling. There aren't too many singers around with Sinatra's depth of experience in big band music or his knowledge of the classical American songbook. There are even fewer with such a real feeling for the lyrics of a song and such a knack for investing a song with style and personality, unquote. That's by this guy, Janelle, a critic.
Okay.
He did. I recommend if you can see this guy,
yeah.
He does a rendition of very similar to his father, and I never saw his father. Mm-hmm. I got the goosebumps when he sang "I've Got You Under My Skin."
Really?
It had his father. It was what's beautiful. It was his brand. It was his interpretation.
Right.
But you heard elements of Sinatra.
Wow.
I think the best. There's only one guy that comes even that I think does just as good of a job. But to hear it from Frank Sinatra lineage,
sure,
and that's Cary Hoffman. I talked about I've seen and I love Cary,
of course.
But this was, I had never heard Sinatra, but this was really, really good. Now, and typical, pardon me. Okay,
whoa, there
okay.
we go.
Caller, what's your name? What's your brand? Where you from?
Yes, hi.
Hi, what's your name?
Well, they call me Mitch.
Okay, Mitch.
New Rochelle.
Okay, Mitch, what do you got on your mind?
I want to go back to the beginning. I was in the car listening to you. I was so happy to hear you talk about Hydrox. My husband insisted on them. He does not like Oreos, and never since I can't find them, he doesn't eat them.
it was gobbled up by Keebler. the Keebler Cookie Company, and then they discontinued Hydrox.
Well,
so you got to write to Keebler, email them, and yeah, I agree.
You can't get Hydrox anymore.
Can't get Hydrox anymore.
No.
As recently as maybe a year or two ago, maybe three or four, I saw them. I remember.
Yes, that's correct.
I can't find them. Okay, one other thing.
Sure.
The Olympic clothing, when they were coming out that they were made somewhere else, I heard that there was a team within our whole team. I think it was the wrestlers, I'm not sure, that they did have all their uniforms made, I think, down in Pennsylvania.
Love it.
So somewhere there are Made in America uniforms, so we should, you know, push that.
Absolutely, yeah. Mitch.
And a New York firm, actually. They're very, very well known. Now, John is partial to Brooks Brothers, but the Hickey Freeman Company in, I believe, I want to say Rochester or Syracuse, they said they could pull a 24/7 deal, and they were ready and willing to churn out the uniforms in time for the Olympics, which start on the 27th.
What always amazes me is how they can have so many different models for all the different teams.
Isn't it interesting?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Get one so we all know who they are.
Yeah. Mitch, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Bye,
very
Mitch.
Good. Bye, Mitch. So that's good. Hydra. I didn't want to tell Mitch this when she was there because she might feel that I was comparing her to my mother, but that was my mother's favorite cookie, Hydrox. She wouldn't eat her Oreos.
By the way, now Hydrox, when I hear that, I automatically think of some hydroxy, like it sounds like.
Yeah, it would sound like a detergent.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, yeah, it was, yes.
Isn't that what worked against it
well,
a little
it
bit
was,
too?
Well, I believe it was, Hydrox was first entered the market, I think, 1904, like a year before the Oreo cookie.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I have definitely seen Hydrox in stores in the last handful of years.
Yes.
So they only just recently canceled them, huh?
That is true. That is true. So, anyway.
Bottom of the hour.
Bottom of the hour.
Thank you for calling, Mitch.
Okay. More brand talk, winner and loser, after the break.
National news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Lissandra. The U.S. and Britain tracking chemical weapons in Syria.
And my own interviews today with current and former U.S. officials has indicated that U.S. and allied intelligence agencies have a pretty good fix on where most of them are, even as they fear a complete breakdown of authority in Syria that could turn it into a lawless state.
Fox's James Rose. And this as an Iraqi general says Syrian rebels have seized control of a border crossing with Iraq. Police in Philadelphia make an arrest in the attempted abduction of a 10-year-old girl that was caught on tape.
The video, along with tips, led police to the suspect.
He is identified as a Carlos Figueroa Fago.
A 33-year-old man now charged with attempted kidnapping and a string of other charges. The neighborhood in South Philly breathing a whole lot easier.
Fox Radio, Jeff Bonasso. Police say the suspect has had brushes with the law. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Forecast Westchester County and the vicinity for the evening hours. Mostly cloudy skies, chance of a shower through the overnight, lows into the upper 60s. Showers likely on Friday, highs will climb into the middle 70s. Showers continuing, Friday evening should end through the overnight, lows into the middle 60s. Clouds give way to partial sun on Saturday. Saturday's highs into the upper 70s. Mostly sunny middle 80s on Sunday. A bit more humid on Monday. I'm Steve Pelletieri Jr. reporting for WVOX Worldwide and WVIB HD.
Cloudy skies, 71 degrees.
You've been working way too hard on the way home.
Have some fun
with VOX.
WVOX.
We are back. Brand Talk, WVOX. My name is Dr. John Tantillo, and I'm here with TJ McCormick, and we have our guest on the line. Our friend and guest is Dr. Sean Doyle. He is a professor at a leading online university in the United States. And I met Dr. Doyle because he was a reader of my blogs and used to tell his students all about the marketing doctor and all those wonderful things. And I thought that this would be a great opportunity for you all listeners to hear exactly what an online university is, an online education. It's the thing of the future. I even have a friend of mine that is going to Harvard University online. And we'll talk a little maybe about that. But without any further ado, welcome Dr. Sean Doyle to Brand Talk. How are you, Dr. Doyle?
Thank you, Dr. Tantillo. How are you?
Okay. So what is this online university stuff?
I have to start out by saying I still tell my students about Dr. the marketing doctor.
Oh, now cut that out.
I have to mention that. So online learning, it's a phenomenon that is not going anywhere anytime soon. It's a wonderful way to learn. People have embraced it. I went to an online university for a PhD as well. And it has a lot to offer in terms of convenience and rigor as well. You know, there's a great misconception out there that online learning tends to be a lot easier than brick-and-mortar learning, where, mm-hmm. you know, the Harvards and sure. State universities, et cetera, where you go to the physical campus and learn. Well, I'm here to say that it's a total misconception. And due to technology and the resources available to us as online educators, mm-hmm. we have a lot to offer in terms of rigor. So the marketing of online education is really interesting to look at as well.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, because of what's going on with the legislators these days in Congress, they're very concerned with the what's known now as the student loan bubble. You know, we had the housing crisis. Now we have the student loan bubble that they're looking at.
Sure.
So that's a great concern in the economy. So what they've put on for-profit universities, which most of the online universities are for-profit today,
mm-hmm.
Is a tight set of criteria that they have to meet, which is called gainful employment, and basically saying that if a student is going to take a loan out, they should graduate and get a job within a certain amount of time and be qualified for a job, et cetera. So mm-hmm. online universities are battling this, and it's something that's of great concern in the for-profit industry.
Mm-hmm.
Even state universities and city universities, for example, are going to have to deal with this as well, also privates. But
right.
for online universities in general, they tend to take the brunt of it.
Right.
So they had to go back and look at their marketing strategies.
Right.
And make sure that they're not, you know, being sold as an infomercial.
Right.
Taken quite seriously. So their yeah. advertising has changed a lot. You'll see that out there. Things of that nature.
Well,
but it's all about quality and delivery of quality education.
Now, Dr. Doyle, would you? What about if at one point there was a brick and mortar experience for online students, like they do at Harvard? So my friend right now takes his listens to the lectures online, takes the tests online, and all of that nice stuff. But right now, for at least a 1 year. Two semesters, actually, 1 year, academic year, two semesters. He has to go to Harvard and attend classes. Is that part, are they going to resist that, or how do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's a wonderful, absolutely wonderful way to learn, actually. It's considered...
What is a wonderful way to learn? Online?
Blended learning. They call it
blended learning.
Yeah,
okay.
And it's where, you know, a student is required to do both, attend face to face as well as learn online.
Sure.
And it lends a lot of legitimacy to the to the actual university, saying that, okay, the student, we're not only going to allow you to show us what you have online, but also face-to-face, and that helps to develop soft skills.
Yes.
And things
yes.
of that nature.
Yeah. Well, you know what I always used to say, and you're going to crack me. By the way, if you have any questions for Dr. Doyle on online education, 914-636-0110. You're listening to Tantillo, T.J. McCormick, Dr. Doyle, and we're here on Brand Talk on WVOX. Well, what do you so? Do you think so? Do you think that you would think that both are important? This more, in other words, this experience where the student not only takes classes online, but somehow comes in contact with the professor as well. But I know what I wanted to say. I guess me being a older person, there would be some resistance for people of my age group to accept someone with that type of degree. Or do you find anything like that going on?
Actually, I was waiting for this to come up.
Okay.
Out of a class of 30 students, at least 10 of my students happen to be baby boomers.
Wow.
Yeah. It's,
wow. It's a third of the class. Wow. That's great. Yeah. Go ahead.
And the vast majority of those people tend to be women. So I don't know. There might be something to look at there.
Wow. That's very, very interesting. Sure. Sure. Well, yeah. But look, I'm going to get in trouble if I generalize about men of my, you know, they're very set in their ways. I mean, I try not to be. As soon as I try to be set in my ways, I hang out with a group of young men and women to, you know, push me along. So you don't get that way, because you have to be contemporary. Mm-hmm. You have to understand what's going on in the world so that you can respond appropriately, so that you can be a better teacher.
Yeah.
That's really what it's about. I want to be the best teacher I possibly can. And I have a dear friend who I'm kind of a surrogate father to. And he's got a lot of learning disabilities. However, we were just talking about this for him. I think online university for him would be perfect. Dr. Sean?
Yeah, I think it would be perfect, actually. It's the matter of convenience. You don't have to get out of work and rush into your car and rush to get to class. And when you get to class, your mind is still buzzing from the traffic and what your day was like, et cetera. You can go home, sit down, have a glass of wine if you want, and relax a little bit. Then you go to school at your convenience, at your desk, your personal desk, et cetera. It's a matter of comfort and being ready to. When you're ready to learn, it means a lot. You know, when you force yourself to sit down and have to learn in front of somebody and you don't want to be there, it's just not.
Yeah.
You know, it's not comfortable.
Yeah, and by the way, in the last few minutes, I just want to throw this out. We're talking about higher education. I think that the future is grammar school, kindergarten, preschool education online. And maybe a combination in the beginning, because we all like those socializing components to education, but somewhere program learning where the kids might be more responsive to a computer screen. I'm going to get some calls about this, than opposed to just having a teacher there. And I'd like you to maybe to comment on that.
That is absolutely true. There are a lot of concepts out there today that educators have recognized the need to have technology in the classroom at that age, at the grammar school level.
Right.
Just to throw a name out there, Khan Academy. I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes.
Yes, I was going to go there. That's exactly right.
That's a phenomenal initiative.
I love it.
It's purely philanthropic in nature, and that's where technology is going to take us.
Yes.
Into the classroom, absolutely.
I agree. Dr. Doyle, where can we find some information about you? Do you have a website that we can go to?
It's actually under construction right now, but it's Sean Doyle, SeanDoyle.info. And I'm currently revising it, but my CV is there and information about what I do is there as well.
Yeah, well, we always like to hear from you. Maybe in a few months we'll have you back where you could talk about some of the projects you're involved with and how you can help our listeners go brand themselves.
Excellent. I would greatly appreciate that.
Okay, Dr. Doyle. Thanks for spending some time on Brand Talk.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. That was Dr. Doyle.
Great,
I mean, isn't that? I mean, it rebrands education. This surrogate son of mine. This would be perfect because he's got ants in his pants. He could never even listen to me lecture wise. Right. Put him on that computer. Wow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, and I know a lot. I might get in trouble for saying this, but I know some of the unions are a little bit resistant to this, but there might be a way. And see, I do believe that there is a way of combining the two things. And for that, I think it's a good thing.
I agree.
Okay, so if you have any questions, just email me at doc@brandtalkradio.com, and I'll pass the information along to Dr. Doyle, and I know he's on Facebook, so you can get him there as well. So anyway, let me just talk a little bit about the we skirted the issue, but the winner and loser of the week. The loser, of course, was our friends over at Ralph Lauren, and the fact that there was all this data out here, the theme of denial. There was all this data out there, and no one over at that great organization saw that. So you got to be proactive. And there's an example, and I deal with this a lot, is the concept, it's just marketing.
Hmm.
You know, it's just not important. What we do on production side is much more important than the marketing. And then the stuff hits the fan, and then we're in for fun.
Right.
And then you got to clean up the person's mess.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing that really frustrates me. Right. And there are dozens of examples, more than dozens, thousands of examples of this. When you take the marketing for granted, you get into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You should never do that. And that's it. It's what we used to, it's the Procter & Gamble model.
Mm.
Attention to detail.
Yeah.
That's the secret.
Yeah.
Okay. So the winner, Excedrin. You know that Excedrin online was being bought for $100 to $150, $200 package?
Why?
Because they ran out of Excedrin. It seemed that the manufacturer of Excedrin mixed up the pills with other over the counter and
was this for their migraine?
Yes,
this was for Excedrin migraine. Right?
I think
read that. That's right.
Okay, so the price was going from anywhere from $150 to $250.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. And it was like a black market to get this.
Wow.
To get this. And to me, that's a great brand.
Mm.
That's everything that you want.
Wow.
When people are willing to pay more for your brand. Talk about a brand equity.
You know who my brand winner is?
Who? Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Tell me.
Barack Obama.
Tell me why.
Because he finally got it out there. He is, and
here we go.
I'm saying is that, you know what? Everybody on the right makes fun of him for being a teleprompter mm-hmm. guy. And he, at his core, his brand.
Right. We found out what his real brand
right.
is.
And, right. And we also know exactly how many people are in love with that. And I just think that this is, I think it's, he's serving the needs of the people that want him there.
Right.
And because there are millions of people in this country who are looking for something for nothing. And he is the guy that is happy to serve that need.
Right.
And so I think that him going off prompter and going from the gut showed everybody what his true brand is.
Oh, yeah. But it's, and what you bring up brilliantly is that's the difference between a niche brand.
Yes.
As opposed to a non-niche brand
right.
or a brand that has more appeal.
Right.
And there's a danger
right.
because there is a ceiling
yes.
when you have a niche brand.
Oh, sure. Hey, listen, his brand won.
Right.
But his presidency?
That's another. Very good. Well, how do you feel about that? 914-636-0110. This is Tantillo McCormick Brand Talk. 1460 on your AM dial. WVOX. Love to hear from you. But right now, it's time for the perennial crowd
yes.
favorite.
Yes.
Dr. John Tantillo's Did You Know That? Did You Know is where little known facts are brought center stage for your delight, amazement, and dare I say, your continuing education.
Yes.
And now, did you know that?
This is Dr. John Tantillo asking, did you know that? Why do some people succeed while others fail? Let's look no further than a boy called Harry from Pennsylvania with a vegetable garden. The year was 1854, and the boy, only 10 years of age, had already created a business out of growing, grinding, and bottling his own horseradish sauce. By 12, he owned a horse and cart and was delivering his products to grocery stores in Pittsburgh 3 times a week. By 17, he was grossing over $2,400 a year, an impressive sum in those days. With a friend, he founded a company packing foodstuffs. The company went bankrupt. Undeterred, Harry founded another company. He added a tomato-based product. Many competing formulas were already in circulation, but Harry's goal was doing foodstuffs better than anyone else. His motto, to do a common thing uncommonly well, brings success. And success came. His company not only produced a range of sauces that people loved, but Harry was a pioneer of sanitary food preparation and fair worker treatment. Harry's company has maintained his focus. Some products may have changed, but not the core belief, as one of his most famous products is still going strong. Last year, 2 single serve packets for every single person on the planet were sold. The product? Ketchup, of course. And Harry? None other than H.J. Heinz. And now you can say, yes, I know that.
Did you know that?
No, but John Kerry sure as heck does. John Kerry is still spending that money.
Be nice.
Well,
be
he
nice.
Is, isn't he?
He probably
yes.
is.
Yes, yes.
Well, you know,
wow.
What's interesting about that story is that the first time he failed.
I love that.
You know, and, when we were talking to Hassan from Premium Foods a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. When you're an entrepreneur,
yeah.
you can work any 80 hours a week you want.
I would love to hear from Hassan about what Obama said.
Yeah, well.
That's a guy. And our friend.
Joe Slagis.
I would love to hear his thoughts. Because he's up to his eyeballs as an entrepreneur.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, yeah.
I would love to hear
that. That's why I wanted him. We got to get Joe Slagis.
We
got to
get him in here.
We got to get him in here. And I had it's so funny. The story with Joe Slagis.
The best guy in the world, by the way.
No question about
it. A doll.
So Joe and I were in the seminary together. I'm not telling any school tales out of school. I've gone public with this. And in 1971, I transferred to another school. I transferred to St. Francis College, and he went to the University of Vermont.
Okay.
Okay. We don't see each other until 1980.
Oh wow!
You're gonna kill me. Yeah. The Democratic Convention. I was a Democrat.
Okay.
Okay.
You went to the convention.
I went to the convention.
Wow.
I was working for Carter. In Queens, so I'm just telling you.
Anyway, we hardly knew ye. Go ahead.
So
you were young and dumb.
So,
go ahead.
So I'm in the delegate section. I wasn't a delegate, but we had passes, and I was working the campaign, and who do I see? But Joe Slakis, who I hadn't seen since 9 years, and I had just gotten my PhD. Uh-huh. And from that moment on, he and I did New York City like nobody else.
Yeah, huh?
We went to every club. I would go to the front of the line. Yeah. We would go to Limelight.
Couple of
we
monks living the life.
Oh, we had so much fun. And it was politics that brought us together.
Isn't
that
funny?
And then he worked for Cuomo,
right.
Mario Cuomo, and I was working for a local assemblyman. And and we've been together and good friends. And I remember the birth of his firstborn son and his daughter. Yeah. And it's just, and this kid now, Ian, is gonna be going to college. I can't believe it. I remember the day he was born.
That's something.
And the point I'm making is that here's a guy who was very corporate, and he started a business at he's dealing with the issues. You know what they said in The Wizard of Oz? She had to learn it for herself.
Yeah.
He's learning a lot of this stuff for himself now,
right.
Firsthand.
Yeah.
And he probably would clock me and say, I don't need any lectures or preaching from you, you know? Why don't you practice what you preach? But the point of all of this is... but he's got very good instincts in terms of branding, and he understands, and he learned this from he does this ice cream, his own ice cream. He's always been a great cook,
like a micro batch ice
cream.
It's brilliant stuff.
He was at Ben and Jerry's original location in Burlington, Vermont.
Right,
that's where he saw it when
No kidding.
So he experienced it kind of first in the early 70s when we went up. We visited him, and it was a lot of fun. But anyway, that's when we went back there once. Then it was old homecoming, so we went to the radio station that he was in. Oh, we had so much fun when we went up there. But anyway, the point I'm making is that he would be a very interesting guest to get on and find and get his reaction,
right,
on what the president and what he had said.
Agreed.
about this. But hey, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So hey, Jeremy Lin, what happened? They threw him under the bus, huh? What happened to Jeremy Lin?
Oh boy. He went for the money, which I cannot blame him for. He could blow out his knee tomorrow and never be able to earn a penny again his whole life.
Right.
I get it. But
yeah.
He was disingenuous.
What do you mean he was disingenuous?
He could have stayed in New York.
He could have, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it was a mistake on both parts. New York should have just gone ahead and signed him immediately. Instead, they let him test the waters of free agency. He went and got a very high offer from.
Do we know how much?
From Houston, a grand total of something like $25 million over 3 years.
What are you kidding? That's terrific for him.
Absolutely. And the thing is, though, is that the word it's disingenuous is he had he had an offer from Houston. New York knew the offer, and because he was with New York at the moment, they had the right of first refusal.
Right.
And so New York pretty much came out and said, all right, we'll probably match that. Then he went back to Houston and said, I'd like a tad bit more. And that put it out of the Knicks' price range. And so if he was happy and he wanted to come, then it was. But all that being said, this is athletics. It's a business. This
it's
is capitalism.
Business.
The kid could blow. He has a surgically repaired knee. He could blow it out and never play again. And this is the NBA. It's guaranteed.
Right.
If he blows out his knee November 16th, he gets paid this $25 million for the rest of his life.
Wow, that's great.
So it's guaranteed. The NFL, it's not like that.
Yeah.
Basketball, you get your money regardless.
So then he did it.
Can't blame him.
No, that's
can't
great.
Blame
that's him. But
he,
great.
But he could have been here. He could have been here. And it's a shame because all this happened here, and it was New York fans that loved him, and it was Madison Square Garden.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, in New York, it's not what have you done for me, it's what have you done for me lately.
Absolutely.
Okay, and I don't know too much about basketball, but all I know is they got Kidd.
Right.
And Kidd trumped Lynn.
Nah. Uh-huh.
Okay, and the other observation I have is that when he blew out the knee, he wasn't top of mind awareness, and people basically forgot about the fans in New York forgot about him for a while.
Yeah,
and so he wasn't performing, and based on that, I also think that the New York market said, we have better. Better prospects. It's in terms of the cost benefit analysis. Uh-huh. It's better we move on.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean the better value was
absolutely.
Kidd.
There's more to be done. They have to. Then the Knicks have been in trouble the last 10 years because of out of control contracts.
Right.
So you got to draw the line.
Well.
What a great show again.
Another great show.
We just can't help ourselves.
I don't.
We're
think
too
we
good.
You can say that. I can't because my mother is listening in heaven, and she wouldn't
Mrs.
like that.
Mrs. Tantillo, we're too good.
Well, that's another edition of Brand Talk, which is you can hear us Thursdays from 5 to 6. Thanks for listening, and remember, it's always easier when you keep your brand in mind. See you next week.
Your official summertime station.
It's just a fun station to listen to, especially in the summer.